everyone, and welcome to the Long and Winding Railroad. My name is W.H. Park, and this is episode 29, as we head down to the close of 2022. We're trying to get some, extra special guests to talk about All Japan of the 1990s with me here on the show at Post Wrestling. And today we have a very special guest, maybe our filthiest guest ever, and that would be one filthy Tom Lawler. Tom, thank you so much for joining us here on the Long and Winding Railroad.
Thank you so much. I have to wonder, who am I in competition with for being the filthiest guest? If it's not me, then who would it be?
Well, we have a correspondent by the name of Neil Flanagan that if he ever shows up on this show, he might be the filthiest guest ever. We'll see.
By appearance?
No. By psyche. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. All right. I'd like to meet this Neil Flanagan gentleman.
Well, tell you what, Tom, if you ever come down to, if you ever go to Ireland, that's where he lives. You can arrange to meet up with him.
I mean, eventually I have to make it over there. I mean, that's where some of my ancestors are from.
So I'm sure you can, Neil, if you're listening, I know you're listening. He's a big fan of the show. He's going to send you a DM about meeting up in Ireland whenever you're
in. Filthy Neil Flanagan. I like it.
Anyway, that's kind of an inside joke. I shouldn't be breaking his confidence about this. But anyways, it's all a joke, folks. But Tom's here. Tom, I got to say, thank you for doing this because I understand, maybe to put this into context, the day before you were in some kind of war of attrition with one Minoru Suzuki.
Yeah, well, I could go back until Thursday night. Thursday night, I was in another war of attrition, a 12-man battle with myself and the West Coast Wrecking Crew and Bullet Club, Jay White, LP, and Juice Robinson taking on the this is like a fever dream tag team of Yo, okay. Yeah, Yo, Homicide, Eddie Kingston, Kazuchika Okada, John Moxley. And to me, the most amazing of them all, Amazing Red, also on that team. So that was Thursday night. Then Friday night, I had to face off against Homicide, Wheeler Yuta, Shota Umino, once again with the West Coast Wrecking Crew by my side. And then, as you alluded to last night, Defy Wrestling in Seattle, I had to fight Minoru Suzuki on the last night of this long and winding road of mine. I made it though. I made it out into the other side and, I'll live to fight on.
I mean, it sounds like you've been having a hell of a 2022. Like you went on your first, New Japan tour in Japan for the G1 Climax. And I got to, I have to confess something to you, Tom. I can't go continue with the show with you without telling you that, in the battle between you and Zack Sabre Jr., you were debating the merits of both Boy George and George Michael. I have to say that I am on team George Michael. I'm a big fan of his. Nothing against Boy George, but I have to say George Michael is Ichiban. I'm sorry.
Well, one of them has a more recent hit? Which one is still putting out music today?
Well, that's really unfair. One is dead. So, I would argue who's
the winner?
I would say George Michael still. He put out
Boy George is living.
Yeah, but George Michael put out Faith and Listen Without Prejudice back to back. That's hell of an accomplishment. Plus all the stuff he did with Wham. I mean, it's a hell of an accomplishment.
Boy George has had a hit record in the 20 teens. Look at that longevity. Culture Club until that. I mean, come on.
No, I got nothing against it. I think his cover of The Crying Game is a fantastic song.
21 more days until I get to show the world that Boy George is indeed Ichiban when it comes to the battle between himself and George Michael.
Okay. Because
I have not forgotten about that. I've not forgotten about Zack Sabre Jr., the Celery Man, Zack Labor Jr.
Listen, as far as everything else goes, so like I'm definitely on Team Filthy with everything else. So if it's against you and Zach Seaver Jr., I gotta go with the Team Filthy. But Tom, we're here to talk about All Japan in the 1990s, and I kind of want to get like your background, like of your fandom of All Japan, and particularly of this era. Like when did you discover AJPW?
You know, this is kind of interesting, but I would actually say I'm a bigger fan of All Japan. I'm like the one who's a bigger fan of All Japan in the 2000s.
Okay.
I really am of the 90s. And I swear to you, I was having a conversation with some of the New Japan staff, maybe the president of New Japan the other day. And we were talking about this very subject. And I really, really enjoyed All Japan after the All Japan and Noah split, because there's something to me, obviously it was unpredictable, right? No one had any clue what was going to happen. No one had any idea how this was all going to pan out. You have, you know, people coming back. Tenryu's banished from the promotion, right? Baba dies. He comes back to try to help save it from its darkest depths. Kawada and Fuchi are the only ones left. You've got all these, you know, indie guys. You got Grand Naniwa doing the crab walk out there in the All Japan ring. And then you have kind of guys leaving the strong style side and moving over and, you know, kind of helping salvage what was still there. And to me, it's like a sign of resilience. You know what I mean? I'm sure everybody at that point was looking, expecting All Japan to fall and go by the wayside. And while it may not be at its greatest heights of the past nowadays, they still just celebrated their 50th anniversary show. And I mean, that is certainly nothing to scoff at. So I've been a really an All Japan fan of them from their darkest times onward, okay, more so than the 90s. I mean, it's easy to be a fair weather fan. You know what I mean? When you're selling out Budokan left and right, it's easy to cheer it on. But when you got, you know, 79-year-old Fuchi out there in the main event in 2000, it's a different story, but that's my favorite era.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan of that era too. Like, I think like at that time, like maybe Taiyokea was like one of my favorite wrestlers.
Hold on, I've got a Taiyokea, a big Taiyokea figure back there.
Oh, like, is this something you got at Totokan during the summer?
No, actually, this one I bought online, but I could go grab it, but I don't know. Is that going to take up too much time?
It's up to you. It's up to you.
I'm peeling figures off my.
If you see it, if you can quickly grab it, sure. Yeah, so, and while you're listening, like I have to imagine, like, you know, you must have been like really rooting for George Hines to get that eventual, you know, triple crown shot during that era when he was like the top foreigner in All Japan.
Well, honestly, big fan of the Golden Left, Mike Barton.
Oh yeah, he was doing good there. How about Wolf Hawkfield? Oh yeah, that is cool.
Oh, I love Virtual Fighter, so of course I loved Wolf Hawkfield.
There you go.
I think this was like, I mean, nobody bought it for like a year. It was on sale, so they got it for a pretty good.
It's criminal because, like, hey, listen, Taiyokea, like the guy helped Muto collect 6 belts. You know what I'm saying? During, you know, Muto's resurgence after he came back with the bald head and stuff like that, and he joined All Japan Pro Wrestling. So you got to give some respect to Taiyokea. And he had one of the best tag teams, in my opinion, with one Jamal, who later became Umaga in the WWE. So, you know, it's a good period. But then I would assume you went back in time and just watched some of the other matches from the decade prior.
Yeah, of course. Like every wrestler is probably worth anything, any worth their salt nowadays. They've probably watched Misawa, Kobashi, Kawada, Misawa, Kawada, Kobashi, all the combinations, Akiyama in there. If you really care about wrestling, you probably watch some Akira Taue. So I've done all that. You know what I mean? I've watched, unfortunately, I probably watched too many matches at this point to remember everything that I've watched. I mean, that's a certainty. That's not even a question. But my favorites, you know, from this era are guys like Kawada. You know, I hate to say it, but I am a strong stylist at heart in a lot of ways. And I enjoy the martial arts techniques. And, of course, Kawada's selling is just like, I mean, it's off the charts. If you're a fan of wrestling, if you're a fan of human emotion, I don't know how much better it gets than watching Kawada in the ring. So I always, whenever I get a chance, I try to watch some Kawada, even if I have to beg to try to watch a Kawada match, you know.
Well, interestingly enough, I'll say on that point, like, I think the only person during that, the same kind of time period that is as good a seller or even better is one Shinjiro Otani, because that man selling is just off the charts as well, up there with Kawada. But interestingly enough, we, you know, like when we were discussing you coming onto the show, you know, like I was asking you what match you want to do, and then I didn't hear back from you. You're a very busy person, so I suggested a Kawada match, but you actually countered with like, oh, I was going to talk about the match that we are actually going to talk about, and why don't you tell us the match that you actually picked?
Yeah, the match that I picked is from 1999 in Yokohama. It is the All Japan Junior Heavyweight title bout between one Yoshinari Ogawa, a.k.a. Rat Boy. I don't call him that. Some do. And one Masahiro Kakihara, formerly of the UWFI, a shoot stylist.
Yeah.
I guess you could say a martial artist, a mixed martial artist, a man that holds a mixed martial arts victory over Rocky Romero at Jungle Fight, one Masahiro Kakihara.
That's right. So we're going to talk about for the All Japan, but actually, you know, officially it's called the PWF World Junior Heavyweight title. That, for those that don't know, the Pacific Wrestling Federation was kind of the governing body, like the IWGP is for New Japan. The PWF was for All Japan Pro Wrestling at the time. And we're going to talk about Yoshinari Ogawa, who's the champion at the time, defending the title against the challenge of newly joined to the company at this time, Masahiro Kakihara.
I just noticed today, this is kind of off the topic, but related to what you were saying, New Japan had tweeted that Mayu Iwatani had defended a Stardom title at the Rumble on 44th Street show. And I don't know, is the SWA even a Stardom title? Wasn't that brought over from...
No, it was created by Stardom.
Oh, okay.
To like
some sort of maybe it's the high speed belt is the
high speed belt. I think is also like
I think
it might be that one. Yeah,
I'll have to look this up. But okay,
you are a big Stardom fan. I know that for a fact.
Yeah, I love it
as I am. So
I love it. I was very glad to meet Waka and Mina and Mayu over the course of the weekend. So,
but I think the dream is for you to get punched in the face by Shuri.
For me to get punched, I'm teaming with her. I don't want to get punched. It seems like everybody else's dream is either for me to get hit by Julia, or really their dream is to get slapped by Julia, is what it seems like more often than not. That's the comments that I get. I'm envious of you because Julia is going to slap you.
Wow. Are you looking forward to getting slapped by or punched by Julia? Because she's pretty hard to punch her.
No, I want nothing to do with that. She's going to be trapped in a submission before she could ever hope to get to me.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I mean, I'm sure she hits harder than Zack Sabre Jr., but...
It's possible. Yeah. It is possible. They are very hard hitters all up and down the roster of Stardom. But back to the match we are
Speaking of hard hitters, right?
Yeah, speaking of hard hitters, Masahiro Takahashi, he's an interesting guy. So we'll talk about him first. So he started his career in the shoot-oriented UWF Newborn, which would then kind of morph into UWFI, and he was apprenticed to kind of like the guy in UWF, one Nobuhiko Takada. Then he would work in the short-lived Kingdom promotion, where he would like kind of be associated with Yoshihiro Takayama. And when Kingdom kind of folded, both Takayama and Kakihara jumped to All Japan, kind of freshening things up, because it wasn't really kind of Giant Baba's philosophy to bring in guys who didn't start off in the All Japan dojo. He would ally himself with Takayama and one Gary Albright as the new version of the Triangle of Power. And then after that kind of folded, he would join Mitsuharu Misawa's Untouchables unit, which included his opponent in this match, the kind of the second in the group, Yoshinari Ogawa. He would leave for Pro Wrestling Noah in the Exodus of 2000, but would not stay for very long because apparently he had some like real life heat with Takao Mori.
I think he lasted one match. I think he did the first show and then was back.
Yeah.
Japan.
And then he went back to All Japan briefly as a freelancer, but then he would head over to New Japan Pro Wrestling as a junior heavyweight in 2001 and stayed there. Really had a very prosperous career in that division until the end of his career in 2006 due to a spinal injury. So, you know, really, really great wrestler that had, unfortunately, you know, had his career cut short by an injury. But were you a big fan of Kakihara in different phases of his career, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, I've watched Kakihara from the UWFI matches. I've watched Kingdom, believe it or not. I've watched his fight with Rocky Romero. I loved his tag team in All Japan with Nagai, as they were the All Asia Tag Champs. And he was one of the few guys who kind of got he got a bone during the UWFI and New Japan feud.
That's right.
You know, he was on some winning teams, which cannot be said for a lot of the guys on the UWFI side. So I myself am like a sucker for pro wrestling MMA fighters. Would you believe that?
I find that it's hard to believe coming from you.
Who would have thought it? But myself, I was always like hoping, you know, in boxing, there's always a saying like people are hoping for the great white hope. Like, is that what it is?
I think so. Yeah.
Great white, yeah, something like that, right? Like, I'm hoping for the great pro wrestling hope. Like, which guy was going to be the pro wrestler who's actually the toughest guy and who could go out there and win all these shoot fights? And I mean, Kakihara wasn't the guy, but when you watch him in the pro wrestling ring, he looks like he could be the guy. You know what I mean?
Right.
A lot of the stuff that I saw in this match holds up really well over time, which you can't always say about certain styles of wrestling or certain matches, but like Kakihara's strikes are on point, you know, throughout the entire match. You see head kicks, you see, you know, spots that wouldn't look out of place in any, you know, pro wrestling match today. And this was 23, 24 years ago, you know? So I think it just shows that like, if you are so good at the simulated form of combat, you know, it doesn't have to be super complicated stuff, as this match proves, you know?
No, this is...
I thought Kakihara was super effective in this match. And, you know, I think you just transplant him, like I said, into today, and he would fit right in.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. He has a timeless... I do think when we get into talking about the match itself, it's a really great blend of, like, that shoot style that he brings with kind of the more traditional, I would even go so far as to say with Yoshinari Ogawa, very kind of North American style wrestling that he brings, because he is not your typical All Japan like Kings Road wrestler. He's actually very much influenced by North American wrestling with the kind of like, because he's called Rat Boy by a lot of fans because he would do things like eye pokes, eye rakes, and things like that, and things kind of like you would see more in American professional wrestling rather than in Japan, especially in All Japan. But, you know, talking about Ogawa, he debuted for All Japan in 1985. He started what? Off in there. Yeah. In 1985, he started.
Still going today.
It's amazing. And he works such a style that it doesn't matter like how old he is, because he can still work the same style he worked in the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s in Noah. And he's still going strong. It's like he's ageless as a wrestler. He would be paired up initially with Junichiro Tenryu in the Revolution stable, along with Toshiaki Kawada and Samson Fuyuki and some other people as well. After Tenryu leaves All Japan to start up his own company, he would become an important member of the All Japan Junior Heavyweight Division. At the time of this match with Ogawa, this is his third reign as junior champion, having defeated Satoru Osako in a tournament to win this title. Kakehara is his first challenger in this reign, and he would have four more defenses before vacating the title in June of 2000. By the end of 1998, Ogawa will also become, and I think this is probably even more important for his career, he will become the regular tag team partner of Mitsuhara Misawa and win multiple world tag titles with Misawa, have wars with the Holy Demon Army, have wars with the burning duo of Kenta Kobashi and Jun Akiyama. He would also go to, you know, in Noah, he would be someone who would win the GHC heavyweight title, I think as a reward for his loyalty to Misawa more than anything else. And that, of course, he does leave with 90% of the All Japan, you know, roster to go to form Pro Wrestling Noah with Mitsuhara Misawa.
I mean, that great match where you're beat up by Kobashi in the title match for the GHC title. Who did he beat? Did he beat Taue
for the belt? This is embarrassing.
Taue beat Rikkyo, maybe?
Taue beat Rikkyo, and then Taue, lost to... I'm going to have to look this up, but what are your initial thoughts of like Ogawa, like back then and like even to this day? I assume you still watch some of his matches now.
You know what? Honestly, I haven't seen very much of recent Ogawa. I haven't seen very much of the Noah Juniors over the past few years. If I watch any Noah, it's usually, you know, the guys in like the main event scene or the more shootier guys, Nakajima, Segura, the guys beating the crap out of each other. So I'm kind of, to say I'm behind wouldn't even be correct. I'm like completely in the dark as to the Noah Junior scene.
So we are both completely wrong, by the way. I'm looking it up. He is the third GHC heavyweight champion. He defeated Jun Akiyama.
Okay, so it's Misawa, then Akiyama, then
Ogawa. And then Takayama would win the title from him. So,
and then Kobashi.
And then Misawa again, and then it's Kobashi.
Then Kobashi, then Rikkyo.
Rikkyo, yeah. And then Taue, then to Akiyama. And then, a who's who then of wrestlers from that point. But yeah, so he's had a very...
The show's not called Noah in the 2000s.
That's right. I'd have to research this part. We're just talking about Ogawa in the 1990s. But let's get to this match, and we'll talk as we go along. We'll talk about why you picked it and stuff, maybe a bit more. But this match comes from the All Japan New Year Giant Series tour. It's day 11 at the Yokohama Bunka Gymnasium. There's a recorded attendance of 6,200 people in this building for this show. And I kind of want to go through this card that this match is on, Tom, with you. So in the opener, it's Naomichi Marufuji and Satoru Osako, and they defeat the team of Kentaro Shiga and Yoshinobu Kanemaru. You know, Marufuji and Kanemaru still going to this day. Yeah. Have you had a chance to tangle with Yoshinobu Kanemaru?
No, but I did a lot of talking at him when he was at the announce booth during the G1. But I don't think he understood a word I was saying. You know, I was asking him for shots of whiskey. And he just kind of, I mean, he looked at me like I had 18 heads. So I'm assuming he doesn't speak very good.
I think he was just like, he was pretending not to understand you because that whiskey is only for him.
Oh, that's
that might have been.
Oh, he's one of those guys. Okay, I understand. Guys, they got some interesting personality traits.
I think anyone who likes whiskey as much as he does has an interesting personality trait. Six-man tag team match: Haruka Aigen, Masanobu Fuchi, and Tsuyoshi Kikuchi defeat Mitsuo Momoda, Rashi Kimura, and young Takeshi Morishima. This is not even like prime Morishima, who's like super huge. It's probably like kind of still thinnish Morishima, because he was kind of like less bulky in his All Japan rookie days. Tag team match: the Great Giant Kimala and Yoshihiro Takayama. That's a hell of a team. Defeat Masao Inoue and Manu Ikea Mossman, who would later become Tai Okea. Yeah. Six-man tag team match. You're going to love this team, Tom. Bart Gunn, Mike Barton, Johnny Ace, and Johnny Smith defeat Jun Izumida, Takao Mori, and Taemin Honda.
Taemin Honda, huge fan. A huge fan of Taemin Honda. I got a
amateur background.
Taemin Honda figure back there for sure.
Oh my god! We'll take your word for that. Maybe we won't have to see it right now.
I can show you all the rolling Olympic hells right now if you want. You want me to go?
Hey, you know what? Do me a favor. If you could do me a personal favor, next time you ever happen to be in the ring with Jay White, you give him the rolling Olympic hell. Okay.
There's like 11 of them.
All of them. Do all 11 versions on Jay White just for me, Tom, please. As I'm begging you here. Following the World Junior Heavyweight title match, we have a really interesting tag team match. Hiroshi Hase and Jun Akiyama taking on the team of Gary Albright and Wolf Hawkfield. And our semi-main is Akira Taue and Toshiaki Kawada taking on the team of Jinsei Shinzaki and Mitsuhara Misawa. That's an interesting pairing there. And our main event at this Yokohama show is Vader, and he defeats Kenta Kobashi in 17 minutes. So it's a pretty loaded card for an All Japan non-Tokyo show or non-Osaka show.
When you've got Wolf Hawkfield third from the top, that's when you know it's a stacked show.
With Gary Albright, yeah. You know, I mean, Gary Albright, Mr. German Suplex himself there. It's a pretty. If I can track down this whole card, I'm gonna try to see if I can watch it. All right, so let's get into the match. It's for the junior heavyweight title, and Kakihara gets introduced. There's this some streamers for him. Yoshinari Gao's wearing a very nice looking satin ring jacket. And speaking of satin ring jackets, Tom, where is that Rivera jacket? I saw a picture of you and Royce Isaacs sporting.
Upstairs, my other closet. I don't have time to go get it.
Do you wear it? I have to ask you.
No, it's honestly, it's not like, I don't think it's made for comfort. It's more made for style.
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't necessarily live in the climate to be wearing jackets either. It's, 120 degrees here in the summer.
But you've made it as a pro wrestler, right? You've got a Rivera Steakhouse jacket.
Yeah. Not only, I mean, okay, I got the Rivera jacket. I went to Mr. Danger, and I got a towel. He gave me some trading cards. I got a T-shirt. What other rites of passage are there?
You need to go to Kawada's ramen restaurant and Taue's steak restaurant now. These have got to be on your bucket list, I think.
Taue's got a steak restaurant?
Yeah, somewhere.
Bar?
Huh?
Yano has a bar.
Yano... Yeah, that place is overrated, in my opinion. Don't tell him I said that, but yeah. I think you're better off going to Kotaro Suzuki's bar. That looks like a more fun place.
Really?
Yes. I'd have to find out. Maybe? I'd have to find out, but I'm sure you can get to Yano's bar. It seems very exclusive sometimes. Like, not so many fans, so that's maybe a good thing for the wrestlers to go there. But Suzuki, Katara Suzuki's got a bar. It's a small place. I think probably a little fun. And you know, you go to the, you know, Pro Wrestling DDT, you know, owned eateries that I think may or may not still exist these days. Who knows?
I'm not sure if I can do that.
You might not be. Yeah, might be crossing some lines that might not.
Yeah, I mean, it's a different world over there, as you know.
Yes.
It's not like over here. Like you can't intermingle with the other species from the different companies.
Unless they have like some big Tokyo Dome show, and then it's
okay. Yeah, yeah.
But getting to the match right away, Kakihara goes for some high kicks. Conceivably, I think in order to get a quick knockout on Ogawa here. Fortunately for Ogawa, he's able to avoid them. Kakihara gets Ogawa in the corner and goes for another high kick, but Ogawa ducks. Kakihara gets caught up in the ropes, and then Ogawa strikes with a shot to the gut. And this is, to me, like straight out of like what I call like the Bret Hart style of wrestling that I think Ogawa must be a massive fan of, because so much of his stuff reminds me of Bret Hart. I don't know if you've ever noticed this about Yoshinari Ogawa.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very basic. He attacks like this. I actually stole this spot, this Kakihara spot, and used it as a finish in a match recently that I had, which was a UWFI rules match. You know, I needed a situation in which I was kind of winning and, you know, needed to lose quickly. And I thought, well, what's a better, you know, option than kind of what happened to Kakihara here. He throws a left roundhouse kick. His leg goes over the top of the ropes and he gets like caught up in there. And then Ogawa uses that to his advantage. So it's like, you know, he helps keep Kakihara look strong here. It's not as if he beat up the better fighter with his strikes in Kakihara. He attacks with a jawbreaker. And then it gets cut off pretty quickly.
Yeah, so there is like the jawbreaker. There's like some offense from Ogawa, but you know, Kakihara's kicks are what, you know, like, you know, kind of turn the tide for him usually within the course of the match. Ogawa goes to the outside and Kakihara hits the ropes to do a tope, but Ogawa moves out of the way. But yeah, Kakihara is smart enough, doesn't go through with the move. There's an exchange of kicks from Kakihara and moves from Ogawa, including an eye rake and a neck breaker to Kakihara, you know, kind of, you know, referencing these kind of dirty tactics that he was kind of known for, which you know, gave him the nickname of Rat Boy. Even, I don't call him that either, by the way.
Even the jawbreaker, it's not like it's not like a cheating move, but it's certainly not like something that makes you look strong. You know what I mean? And he relies a lot on that jawbreaker, as he does like early on here, as he does later on. You know, obviously much of his offense is based upon evading somebody and then capitalizing, which I think a lot of, you know, everybody wants to look, as far as like wrestlers go, I can tell you this, a lot of guys are very concerned with looking strong. But there's a lot to be said for, you know, looking not necessarily weak, but Ogawa does look weak in some instances. You know what I mean? But then it pays off in the end because he's able to use that to his advantage because he's so cunning. You know,
and what's the word that people say? Don't work harder, work smarter. And
work I think smarter, that's yeah.
And, but and
if
that's
if
what
he stood up. Like if he stood up to Kakihara this whole match and did this, you know, throughout his career and stood up to guys and beat him up with strong offense, his character wouldn't work.
No.
You know what I mean? The sum of his parts is much better than they are, you know, individually.
Well, contextually, he's also still basically a junior heavyweight still. So he has to work differently when he's wrestling guys who are stronger and bigger than him. And this comes through with like his tactics and like that. He's a really excellent, you know, at his core, a really great wrestler.
Yeah, so, a solid like wrestler. And you mentioned his quickness, but also one thing we have to mention is that Kakihara is used to being the quicker guy against a lot of the other heavyweights in All Japan, right? So he's used to having a quickness advantage, and there's nothing worse in real fighting, I'll tell you that, than being used to having the quickness advantage and then facing somebody who now has that advantage on you. It's something that's very tough to make up for. And, you know, I think we see a little bit of that, or a lot of that, honestly, throughout the match with Ogawa and Kakihara, where Ogawa finds himself in control because maybe for the first time in a long time, Kakihara is faced with somebody who's just quicker than he is.
Yeah.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
So there's a point where Ogawa decides to work on the right arm of Kakihara, but Kakihara is able to escape the control by landing a solid kick to the butt of Ogawa, and then he follows this up with a drop kick. Kakihara tries to follow up with a spinning heel kick, but Ogawa wisely ducks out of the way. You're talking about this quickness that you're referring to, Tom. There is a strike exchange between the two, which Kakihara wins, and then he locks in a side headlock. Ogawa gets Kakihara up against the ropes, and as Ogawa backs away cleanly, Kakihara blasts him with this open hands and slap that knocks him down. And it was such a hell of a slap that I felt it watching it on YouTube here, Tom.
Yeah, some of these, there's one that's particularly like brutal later on. I will say sometimes the ones that seem like they're the worst aren't. So I'm assuming that was the case when it came to Kakihara. But I mean, I was a big fan of this match because of Kakihara's offense. It was so basic, but everything just looked so, so crisp. So clean. His technique was so good. Every strike was in there. And I just thought, like, I mean, I was blown away. It's like, I watched this match. I go, why haven't I been watching more of him, you know, for the past few years? So,
I mean, maybe not as many people are aware of Kakihara. So like, if you start,
I'm sure using, they're not, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, if you start using his offense against them, they may not have an answer for you. Not that they necessarily have an answer for you these days, but you know, maybe more complicated for your opponents in the future if you start busting out, you know, kind of Kakihara techniques here.
I don't know. I mean, maybe I need to do more Ogawa offense since,
you know, you can, you know, like if you know, lines are being crossed, if they can be crossed, maybe you can team with him in the future. You know, he likes teaming up with like guys from, you know, outside of Japan. So
yeah, I like consider myself the Rat King in a lot of ways. The Rat King of wrestling. So
that this could be a new t-shirt you could put out there, Tom. Like, you know, we could be making you some money off of this show, maybe.
Yeah, there's no double in that one either. It's in reference to the Ninja Turtles Rat King.
There you go. Who, Splinter?
No, there's the rat, isn't there the Rat King?
I don't know. The only rat I'm aware of is there. Is there
minions of like a army of rats in the sewer?
You could be right. I only know about Splinter. The teacher of the Ninja Turtles. But anyways, Kakihara blasts Ogawa with kicks to the chest while he's standing at ringside, and Ogawa's laying prone along the apron. And Kakihara delivers this really awesome looking straight down kick, like a scissors kick almost to Ogawa's back. An axe kick. Sorry,
Andy,
I stand
corrected. Andy Hoog style axe kick to the back of the head as he draped him over the apron there.
Great stuff here. Yes, Andy Hoog. Oh, I didn't think we would ever get a reference to Andy Hoog on this show. But that's just the benefit of having Tom Lawler on the show, everyone.
It's pretty much, out of all the things that Totokon has, they have Andy Hoog's gear. And that's got to be the coolest thing.
How much was it?
God,
do you remember?
Say 20,000 or 30,000 American, maybe.
Jesus. They have like some people's gears, like, and I was just like looking at it last time I was in Totokon, go two years ago, and I was just like, who would buy this? But then I'm thinking, yeah, there's some people up there that might want to buy this person's gear. I'm not gonna say whose gear, but
the very shorts that Rocky Romero wore when Kakihara beat him at Jungle Fight are in Totokan. I saw them. So I don't know who's buying those.
Yeah.
Except for me. I mean, I'm in the market for them next time I go, especially now that the yen is even down more.
There you go.
Right?
Exactly.
I'm going to pick up those and Megumi Fuji Smack Girl gloves that I'm very upset I didn't grab when I was there last time. But yeah.
You know, it's time.
Affordable stuff and then some insane stuff. So.
But it might be more affordable now because the yen is so weak these days.
That's
so.
My shot.
Excuse me, just coughing there off mic. As Ogawa recovers and tries to get back into the ring, Kakehara hits him with a vicious sliding sidekick to the head. I just love that. It's the technique you're talking about. Like, it's not a drop kick or a sliding baseball kick. It's he runs along the ring and slides and then hits him with a sidekick to the head. I'm just like, I don't recall seeing anyone else do that kind of a kick to the outside like Kakehara did here.
It's a sliding ninja kick.
Is that what it's called?
That's what I'd call it.
It's what you're calling it?
Yeah.
There you go. Kakehara follows him to the floor, launches him into the guardrail. Ogawa catches a kick and tries to smack Kakehara, but Kakehara has it scouted and smacks Ogawa and has him posted up against the steel post at ringside. And Kakehara goes for a high kick, but this is the turning point. Ogawa rolls out of the way, and Kakehara ends up kicking the unforgiving steel post. And this is now the turning point for Yoshinari Ogawa. And Tom, have you ever done this where you've had an opponent lined up against a steel post on the outside and gone for like a strike and they moved and you ended up eating it, whether it's from like, you know, like a punch, something with your arm or with a kick?
I'd say 50% of the time on house shows every time, maybe. It's very, very common spot you see in wrestling. So, yeah, I've done this one. A lot of times it'll be a chop, you know, especially on like – it's more of like a house show spot to me. You go outside with the person, you brawl a little bit, you hit the guy so that they can hear it nice and loud. You chop each other so that they're going, oh, man, these guys are laying into each other. And then you put the guy against the post. You swing for the chop. Oh, he moves. You make a big noise. You can go back inside and move on with your lives. Yeah, this is very I love this spot. If you got nothing else to do for about 10 seconds. You want to throw
just do this spot. Well, this like I said, this is the turning point for Ogawa in this match, because now he's going to go to work on this left leg, this left foot of Masahiro Kakehara. And again, this is the point of the match where I am convinced, like, Ogawa is a massive Bret Hart fan. The way he goes after the leg, the crispness of his moves reminds me so much of Bret Hart. This includes ramming the leg against the steel post several times. You know, Kakehara tries to rally back with some kicks to the chest, but Ogawa catches the leg and hits this beautiful-looking dragon screw leg whip. Ogawa drags Kakehara to a corner and then plies a variation of their ring post figure four leg lock, which is something he did a lot, you know, post, like, after Bret would create this in the WWF, Tom.
Yeah. He did a different variation where he had, like, the leg underneath, and then he was kind of using his foot to stomp on the leg and, like, pry it back. He was pretty – I mean, he attacked – kind of went to, like, the shoulder at first, but then was very, very focused on the leg once Kakehara made that mistake and threw that kick. And, you know, obviously that is something you see a lot of in Bret Hart matches, you know, working a body part. And a lot of times, I mean, you see it, you'll see it now. You know, just there's so many matches now and everything's so accessible. Of course, you're going to see people working body parts. But it is a little bit of a different contrast than the usual back and forth pissing contest style that you would see around this time.
Ogawa goes for a heel hook, but you know, Kakehara breaks up by grabbing his own heel hook, which makes Ogawa release his move. Ogawa goes back to the leg with a figure four, but Kakehara gets to the ropes.
How genius! The shoot hold doesn't work on the shooter, right? Every time Ogawa tries to get the advantage with striking, it doesn't pay off.
No.
He tries a shoot hold here. It doesn't pay off. Well, he goes to a professional wrestling hold, the figure four. And lo and behold, it works, right? Because Kakehara isn't as adept at the defense. Well, simple psychology there. But
yeah, I think he's able to break this hold by getting to the rope. Yeah, he breaks the, like I said, he breaks the hold by getting to the ropes. Classic pro wrestling move. Kakehara is finally able to create some space with a Manhattan drop and some kicks to the chest, which knock Ogawa to the mat. There's another axe kick, I guess. I mistakenly call it scissor kick. An axe kick to the back of Ogawa's head.
Scissor kick would be like you like Booker T jumps and then does the – that would be a scissor kick.
Scissor kick, yeah. It's
just the up, down.
Yeah.
With the leg, yeah. That's it.
It's the axe kick, and then he follows it up with this beautiful-looking windmill suplex. Kakehara tries to go for a German, but Ogawa smartly kicks out the left knee with a back kick. Kakehara ducks an enziguri attempt and locks in a leg lick of some kind. It's like where his opponent is on his front, and then he grabs the leg and starts pushing it in with his shoulder. Like, what would do you have a name for this, Tom?
It's the one that they use in Fire Pro all the time. I think is the name of it.
That's a Fire Pro.
Fire Pro. It's like it's like a calf hold or something. I'm trying to think of what they actually call it in Fire Pro because it's the only time I've ever seen somebody submit to that move. But the crowd went nuts.
Yes.
When he put it on. I couldn't believe it. This move here, it's I guess the submission would be a calf slicer. Right, if I was gonna have to pinpoint something, but this is not a much of a legitimate hold now that we've kind of developed the mixed martial arts. But much to his credit, he does switch to a knee bar pretty quickly, and the crowd goes even more crazy for this as Ogawa also goes crazy, tapping the mat almost immediately like nuts. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, oh. It's 1999. You still had to verbally submit back then, I guess.
So. And my brain is conditioned. Like when he did that, I'm like, oh, gave up. No, forgot. They don't do that at this point, and especially in an Ultimate Fan for wrestling.
For those of you that don't remember, up until really, it's the time of like Ken Shamrock coming to the WWF. I think that was the changeover to accepting the tap out as the legitimate form of submission. Before it was, you'd see guys in the 80s and 90s just beating the crap out of the mat, tapping out with one hand, both hands, and the match continues on. It wasn't like an accepted form of submission until, you know, the UFC got popular, and then Ken Shamrock made his way over to the WWF. So, and that's only been in the past like 25 years. That's like this is like a new rule in pro wrestling.
That's right. The tap. So basically, Ogawa is just slapping the mat in pain.
Yeah.
But now it'd be like, oh, he tapped. You gotta give up. We gotta end the match now. Ogawa is finally able to get to the ropes, but you know, Kakehara follows up with a judo throw, and then I think this is when you're talking about another big slap to the face. He goes for a
running slap. He comes off the ropes. He hits the ropes. And comes off. Usually you hit the ropes and you come off with an elbow, a clothesline, a kick of some sort. No, he hit the ropes and he wound up and slapped Ogawa seemingly as hard as he could in the face. What a man. What a guy.
Kakehara or Ogawa? If you're taking the slap. Both of them. So Kakehara goes for a pin. One, two. There's a kick out. Kakehara makes the belt around the waist gesture. And then he hits the Kaki Cutter, which is his version of the STO. And this is kind of his finisher, but Ogawa is able to kick out. And this is my theory, Tom, is that I think due to the work that Ogawa did on his base leg, the left one, you know, and he weakened it to the point that Kakehara was not able to get the full power he needed to finish off Ogawa with his Kaki Cutter here.
Yeah, yeah. And possibly on that slap, too. You know, I said seemingly all of his power, but with that left leg, that'd be the one that'd be planning on. He threw the right hand. So maybe I have to go back and look at the tape. Maybe his left leg was compromised. Maybe it buckled a little bit. Maybe he didn't have all the power on that slap. Good eye.
Yes, he scouted Akihara, so he knew, like, I got to work. If I get a chance, work on that base leg of Akihara. There is a sleeper on Ogawa that turns that Akihara turns into a choke, but the ref quickly is like, "That's no, you can't do chokes in All Japan Pro Wrestling." He breaks it up. Ogawa goes for his own sleeper, but Akihara blasts him with this reverse kick to the face. Ogawa is able to hit an enziguri and follows up with a back suplex and then a second one, but Akihara won't stay down for a three count. And I gotta say, if anyone in All Japan at the time that you're gonna want to take a backdrop from or backdriver suplex, it's probably Ogawa because it's probably the safest one.
Yeah, probably. And I mean, it's his finish essentially, but he's still not trying to finish you. He's not trying to end your life out there.
No. It's trying to win the match.
You're going to win an official wrestling contest with a three count and, you know, send you home and you can come back and wrestle the next day.
Ogawa tries for a tiger driver, but Akihara blocks it and then goes for another Manhattan drop. But Ogawa uses the momentum for a roll up.
It was a Northern. I think he was going for the Northern Lights.
Was he? It looked like he was trying to go for another Manhattan drop. Could have been the Northern Lights suplex. But Ogawa wisely, you know, reverses it, gets a roll up. There's a two count here. And this is kind of like we're in what I call the crescendo of the match, Tom, because this is now it's just like, oh my God, like pin attempts galore here. Ogawa blocks a strike and goes for a schoolboy two count. This is one of my favorite moves. I don't know if you ever played Virtual Pro Wrestling 2 for the Nintendo, Tom.
A lot of giant gram.
Yeah.
More so.
But if you play Ogawa or steal his moveset for like your creator wrestler, this is one of my favorites. He does the eye poke, chin buster into the figure four jackknife pinning bridge, which I fucking love that move, by the way. Can I just say, like, more people should steal the figure four jackknife pinning bridge because it's amazing. But again, this is only a two count, but that would win the match if I used it in Virtual Pro Wrestling 2, Tom. There's a backdrop driver with a bridge, but Akihara kicks out. This crowd are like going nuts for this match, by the way. And it's a testament because, like, they're, you know, All Japan fans were not known for being that into the junior heavyweight matches, but I think they got just so absorbed into the story that Akihara and Ogawa were telling here in the ring that they were like responding so well to it.
Yeah, when you think about like a junior heavyweight match, this is not what you would expect. This is not like a prototypical junior heavyweight match with high flying. This is more, obviously, a more mat based offense and really, you know, built around like solid just the pro wrestling psychology of working over the leg, which Akihara in many ways needs to win. He needs it to land most of his signature offense, and Ogawa always having a counter for it. All the way up until the end.
There's a great spot where Ogawa puts Akihara on the top rope and Akihara goes for, I think the announcers call it the Jiku Katami armbar. And he gets it. But Ogawa grabs the pant leg of the referee and makes him fall on top of Akihara, thus breaking the hold. And of course, like the fans kind of boo this a little, but not fully. But the referee admonishes Ogawa for that, and then the crowd's like, "Oh, we want to see a clean fight here," and you kind of like made it a little dirty here, Ogawa.
Yeah, he yanks, like he puts Akihara up on the top, and he goes for a strike. He goes for he goes for a punch, and Akihara catches it and rolls off the top rope into the arm bar, has it extended, and like Ogawa doesn't wait very long. You know what I mean? The referee gets pretty close, and he grabs a hold of his pant legs and pulls him right on top. Akihara breaks the hold. He's pretty pissed. He stands up, and he's, you know, complaining to the ref, rightfully so, as he should be. And Ogawa, ever the opportunist, ever the wrestling genius, goes right back to the leg, a simple stomp to the knee, and then we're back off to the races.
That's right. From here, Ogawa Irish whips Kakehara to the corner and runs in to drive his shoulder into his breadbasket, but Kakehara moves out of the way, grabs Ogawa's arm, and drops down for another armbar. But Ogawa uses the momentum to roll up Kakehara for a cradle pin and gets the 1, 2, and 3. And just, I love this finish just because it came out of nowhere, but it made so much sense.
Yeah, there's not a lot of finishes like nowadays where you're like, oh, that came out of nowhere. This one really comes out of nowhere. There was, like, it's very simple, as you can imagine at this point, right? Ogawa eats the post. So you're expecting this is just kind of a normal spot that happens frequently. It never, almost never leads to a finish in a match. Kakehara, like a smart wrestler should, leaps on the injury. But, you know, Ogawa's whole deal is that this guy is smart. He's cunning. He's wily. He is going to outsmart you. And in the end, he wasn't tougher than Kakehara. He couldn't match him blow for blow. He couldn't go back and forth with him submission for submission. His big holds, his backdrop suplex, which he hit, I believe, actually 3 times during this match, didn't look like it was going to be anywhere close to keeping Kakehara down. So he had to rely on, trickery in a lot of ways. And while he didn't cheat necessarily to win, he did sneak out the victory in a lot of ways with that roll up. And I love this match. It was different than a lot of matches that, you know, people love today. But as we said, as I said earlier, like, I think you could take this match and insert it onto any card in 2022 and it's going to get pretty much the same reaction. It holds up pretty damn well, if you ask me.
It's a great match. It's under 25 minutes, which is a big plus for me. It's 16 minutes, 22 seconds. Okay. So, and it's a very brisk match. It flows really nicely. And that's, I think, a really, you know, a testament to the skill and the style of Kakehara and Ogawa, just keeping up the pace with one another to have like a very smooth and nicely flowing match that doesn't outwear, you know, outstay its welcome. I like this match a lot. I can't remember if I've ever seen it before because, like, I'm not someone who went out of their way to go watch too much junior heavyweight stuff, but, like, I'm really glad you picked this, Tom, because, like, it was such a fun match for me to watch in context with, like, a lot of the other matches that I've reviewed for this show. But I'm a huge fan of Yoshinori Gawa and have been for maybe for the last 10 years, because, like, I've really turned around on him. I wasn't a huge fan of him before, but, like, now I go back and watch his stuff from the 90s or the 2000s, and it's just like, yeah, I appreciate more what he does now than I did at that time. So, yeah, you know, Kakehara bows to Ogawa to show his respect for him, which is good, as they'll soon be in the same, the same unit with Misawa called the Untouchables. And then, yeah, it's a very fun match. And, I guess that wraps it up there. Any final thoughts on the match itself, Tom?
No, you said you were going to ask earlier how I ended up picking this.
Yes.
And I was trying to think of how I ended up picking this, but there's a wrestler, an independent wrestler, Wes Barkley, who I'm friends with, and I have been imploring him to watch Ogawa matches for a couple of years. So I went and I was doing my own research and my own homework on Cage Match, looking up the highest rated of the Ogawa matches. And when I saw, well, there's one against Kakehara, well, I could probably learn something from watching that one. That's not one that I had seen, or if I had, I certainly hadn't remembered it, you know? So that's how I ended up on there. There's a lot of stuff in there that I could see myself stealing. Good opening sequence, great finishing sequence. If you want to, you know, protect yourself in a loss on one of these indie shows around the country, you know, just saying to any shoot fighters out there. So really happy I watched this match, and I'm going to be even more happy to go watch some more Kakihara. I'll probably watch some more Ogawa as well, since you can find more Ogawa stuff than you can Kakihara. But
I mean, you work for New Japan Pro Wrestling for the most part these days, John. There's a lot of stuff on World with Kakihara as a junior heavyweight in that company in the 2000s. So I highly recommend a lot of stuff he does with Minoru Tanaka, and you know, like his alias of Heat as well, and like the stuff with Liger and other guys in the junior division at the time.
Junior heavyweight six man tournament champion, I believe. I think he won Best of the Super Juniors one year.
He did.
Right?
Who did he beat? I'm trying to remember who he beat. Was it Minoru Tanaka? Was it Koji Kanemoto? I didn't do enough of my homework at this time. I have that match somewhere on actual VHS tape somewhere, I'm sure, in my house. But Tom, anything to plug before we let you go here?
No, not really.
No?
I mean, if we've gotten this far, you probably know where to find me on Twitter at Filthy Tom Lawler. And that's about it. You know, New Japan World, if you're not a subscriber, even though this is an All Japan podcast.
Oh, we cross all lines here.
Yeah. If you're not a subscriber to New Japan World, please do so. Please watch my matches on New Japan Strong, my matches in Japan for New Japan, and check out Historic Crossover, which is like the most exciting night of the past 40 years of my life. We've got like Great Muda's last match in New Japan is happening on the show now. The first ever IWGP Women's Champion is going to be decided between Kairi and Mayu Iwatani. Somehow, the feud between Boy George and George Michael got inserted into Stardom's main event feud as myself and Shuri take on Julia and Zack Sabre Jr. So I'm super excited about that night. Everybody else should be too. And
I think it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to that tech match. Like, and I know you deny it, but I think you're secretly hoping to get punched by or slapped by Julia as an initiation into Japanese, you know, full on, you know, getting hit by a Joshi wrestler is like, you know, the initiation one must have in to be fully part of the Perez scene, Tom. So. But Tom, thank you so much for doing the show. I hope we can get you back on in the future. Maybe we'll talk about the match that I kind of thought of choosing, which was, by the way, Hiroshi Hase versus Toshiaki Kawada. Maybe we can do that sometime in 2023 if you have the time.
Yeah, and I told you I'm up for any excuse to watch a Kawada match.
Okay, so I'll save that for you, Hase versus Kawada, in the future with Tom Lawler back on the long and winding road. I want to thank all the listeners for their support of the show. I want to thank Tom again for appearing on the show after having a war with Minoru Suzuki the day before. And yeah, you can find everything over at postwrestling.com. And until next time, I will say goodbye.